top word of mouth Wednesday. We're here back for another Wednesday. It is July the 21st, 2010. My name's Daniel Libby, and we've got a full show tonight because the search for justice continues as actions are taking place nationwide. Activists will not forget what happened at the G20 in Toronto. The protests, we've got audio from the last Saturday's Bubbles for Peace action at Queen's Park, including an interview with Don Stevenson, who is an advisory board member of CAP, Canadians Advocating Political Participation. As well, we got some words with Dan from the Toronto Truth Seekers, who shares his hardcore G20 arrest story and what happened to the Truth Seekers megaphone. Plus, more updates on the G20 and maybe even get into another segment of Reasoning Conspiracy this week. Later in the show, all that and more coming up tonight on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. You are listening to CKLN 88.1 FM in Toronto, broadcasting here from Ryerson University campus. This is the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Stay tuned, 7 to 8 p.m. Word up, word of mouth, word is bond. Word up, word.
This is Kevin Annett with the friends and relatives of the disappeared, and I want you to listen to Word of Mouth Wednesday. And please listen to our website, hiddenfromhistory.org.
All right, Word of Mouth. We're back here on Word of Mouth Wednesday, and I just want to shout out Victor Baines Marshall, of course, the host of The Middle Passage, for throwing to us right before his show ended off there on for today. Middle Passage comes on from 5 p.m. to 7 p.m. Then, so we're on 7 to 8 p.m. So for the next hour, we're going to be going through some info. And actually, the most recently, the event that I was at on Saturday involving the G20 and the stories of the arrest and, you know, the Bubbles for Peace action because of this viral video of a girl being threatened with arrest for blowing bubbles near the riot cops. Well, it's posted on therealnews.com. What I got for you is a feature interview here with a legendary Canadian, Don Stevenson. Legendary because he was involved with the creation of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. And now he's also on the advisory board. He's an advisory board member for the Canadians Advocating Political Participation, the group that's putting together a lot of these rallies and actions, a group I think that formed during the No Prorogue when Stephen Harper, the Prime Minister, prorogued Parliament. Well, now CAP is doing a lot of work around this G20. And trying to get, you know, political participation, get people involved in politics through this. And, because of what happened at the G20 and because of what it did, in relation to the Canadian Charter of Rights and Freedoms, it was really interesting to talk with Don Stevenson. So here's a feature interview here with Don Stevenson from the Canadians Advocating Political Participation from this Saturday, which was July the 17th. And, here is some words from the rally. You're going to hear a bit of Don's speech, and then I got to interview Mr. Stevenson after he made the speech, so you'll hear both of those right now. All right, word up, word of mouth.
But they brought passion and idealism to their cause, just like CAP. And their participation and your participation is an essential part of a healthy democracy. I worked for 30 years at Queen's Park, often as in the field of minority rights. For 14 of those years, I was part of the negotiations that led to the Constitution Act of 1982, and I helped to write the Charter of Rights and Freedoms. Section 2 of the Charter states that freedom of peaceful assembly is a fundamental right of Canadians. Section 7 of the Charter states that everyone has the right to be secure against unreasonable search or seizure and not to be arbitrarily detained or imprisoned. What happened in Toronto 3 weeks ago goes against the spirit of what we accomplished in 1982. And by the way, I remember very much a day on April the 17th, 1982, just like this, in front of the Parliament of Canada. I was sitting just in front of the Queen and Prime Minister Trudeau, and we were all watching to the west because a storm was coming. And just as the Queen bent over to sign the Charter of Rights, the rain came. No, it's not coming today, thank God. Well, in fact, instead of a celebration of the Charter, the images that have gone around the world about our peaceful multicultural city have not been centered on whatever decisions the G20 leaders arrived at, but have featured burning cars and masses of riot police arresting mostly peaceful protesters. We need a public inquiry so that all Canadians can understand why and how we spent $1 billion on security. What were the roles of decision makers in Ottawa, in Barrie, in Queen's Park, and Toronto? And why the city's proposal to have the event at the CNE was ignored? The reviews which have been announced by the Toronto Police Services Board and the Ontario Ombudsman can only touch some of those issues. Canadians deserve to know why the most blatant violation of the spirit of the Charter of Rights and Freedoms since it came into force in 1982 was allowed to take place. We need a public inquiry now. Thank you.
Word up, word of mouth. Wednesday, it's Daniel Libby here at the Civil Liberties Now. The rally continues on July 17th, and we've got a guest here, Mr. Don Stevenson. But do you mind introducing yourself?
Okay. I was just named to the advisory board of the CAP, the Canadians Advocating Political Participation. I had been a deputy minister at Queen's Park here, and I had earlier been involved in negotiating and helping to write the Charter of Rights and Freedoms.
Right, and I know that's one of the important parts of this rally is recognizing the Charter of Rights and Freedoms and what happened during the G20 weekend. What is your opinion on what went down in the end of June?
Well, I thought it was security overkill. I thought first that it shouldn't have been in downtown Toronto. I think if the host city says that they've got a better place in the city, they proposed the CNE grounds. I was out to the CNE grounds a week or two before the G20, and oh my, it really is a now much lovelier place than it used to be. And the police around there told me that you could seal it off much more easily and you wouldn't have what happened in the main streets of downtown Toronto.
Right, and I guess, could you take us back to the time when the Charter was being formed? What was it like in Canada then? Were there circumstances that, like reasons for the Charter to be made?
Well, the constitutional discussions really began in the late 60s after there were a lot of manifestations in Quebec by people that wanted a separate Quebec. And it got so that there were prior to the October crisis of 1970, there were a couple of kidnappings and a murder of a minister. And so to get a sense by Quebecers that this was their country, as well as the Anglos, we had what amounted to about 18 years of constitutional discussions. A lot of things happened. We had the Official Languages Act in 1969, and a number of things Mr. Trudeau really took the lead on to try to make Quebecers feel at home in the rest of the country. The discussions formally ended in late 1981, when we did agree on a method of bringing the Constitution back from Britain and putting in a Charter of Rights and entrenching Aboriginal rights, and the whole thing was signed by the Queen herself on April 17th, 1982, in front of the Parliament buildings. At an event a little bit like this, with, as I was saying this afternoon, with a big storm coming from the west.
And we're here at Queen's Park, and it's a lot of people out here with the Canadians Advocating for Political Participation rally. And with the G20, it seems like it's got a lot of people looking into these issues and stuff. Do you believe that that this kind of issue is going to get a lot of people to participate in politics?
Well, I certainly hope so. It's amazing what a group of idealistic, young, passionate people who've set up CAP have been able to do by using modern methods of communication. They've got over 100,000 members, and they've set up chapters across the country, and they're doing a great job of getting particularly younger people involved in the public issues of the day. At a time when our proportion of people voting in elections is dropping, we've got a revival, particularly among young people, of interest and activism, which I'm all for, and that's why I was happy to join the advisory board and to speak at the Democracy Cafe series that CAP is organizing.
And here at Queen's Park, I know the major building we got here is the Ontario Legislature. Do you have any opinion on Delta McGuinty and the secret law, or the so-called secret law that was in effect?
Well, I worked at Queen's Park for 30 years, and I must admit I had never heard of the Public Works Act with this kind of provision in it. I think there was, it sounds to me like it was something pretty obsolete, and certainly the government and the city showed a rotten sense of communication, because the police chief himself really didn't know what authority he was being given by it.
Mr. Don Stevenson, do you support the public inquiry?
Yes, very much. The problem now is that the Police Services Board inquiry can only deal with the actions of the Toronto Police. The Ombudsman of Ontario can only really look at the OPP or the Public Works Act. But so much of the whole event was orchestrated by the federal government, and particularly by the security people. I think that the federal government just allowed the security people to overrun the preparations, and I think a public inquiry would bring out just who was responsible for what element of the G20 preparations and the action during the 3 days.
For real. And Mr. Don Stevenson, thanks a lot for speaking with us today.
You're welcome.
Word up, word of mouth. Wednesday, we're back here. It's about 7:14 p.m. And that was just an interview with Don Stevenson recorded at the event, the Civil Liberties Now. The rallies continue. It took place on July the 17th on Saturday at Queen's Park. And, you know, you heard some of the info there, and, you know, Canadians advocating political participation are, you know, they're hosting a lot of these events all over Canada. A website to check out, CanadaParticipates.ca. Don Stevenson's on the board of CAP, the Canadians Advocating Political Participation, on the advisory board. And I think also Judy Rebick is there. Judy Rebick was sort of the host of the rally on Saturday. And she's also a professor at Ryerson University, which is where we're broadcasting from here at CKLN. With all this stuff that's going on, and more info coming out every day on the G20. You know, we're seeing lists of suspected black bloc and pictures on being posted on the internet throughout the media. The hunt for the black bloc is on 3 weeks, well, getting into 3.5 weeks later after the G20. But within the activist community, also people are looking out for, you know, the truth, and people are trying to find out what happened in the G20, and people are trying to find out, you know, who put the secret law forward, who was calling the shots, and, you know, why all of this, why thousands of people had to be arrested. Well, another way to look at this the whole situation is through music, and one track that really does it is a track called Whose Streets Are Streets. It's a track by 4D, and we'll play that track, and we'll be right back on the Word of Mouth Wednesday. Word up, 4D. Keep it real. Keep it locked. Word of Mouth. C-K-L.
We had enough of this G20. We had enough of Dalton. We had enough of Harper. Time to get rid of them. What's country coming to? We let the select few act like we dumb fools. 1.3 bill to control the back talk, then justify the actions of spending because of black bloc. Nah, the people ain't feeling that here. HST, G20, secret laws all this year. I think it's time we let them know that they tactics ain't working. No more wool over the eyes of the class that are working. The media only showing what they want us to see. So we have to press for the truth where the knowledge is free. Grab your copies, your basics, opportunity for fight back. Papers of the people, it's our people that write that. This ain't 86, Fort Pickens, Geronimo. We need to expose the truth, 2010 to Guantanamo. Abuse of power situations and the torture plenty. So come together and your huff G20. We need to take the city back, they don't treat us as equal. Enough of this issue, all power to the people. They beat up protesters singing no Canada, our home and native land, but they really no fan of us. They handle us in an attempt to dismantle us. No cops are searching women, probably got it on camera. Secret laws passed by Dalton, villainous ways. They increase police presence, it's a military state. Public Works Protection Act is a joke. Empowers cops and render cops to harass our working folk. Our city's cowards rolling masks, rubber bullets and tear gas. But the roots hold the blade of the grass. Catch the metaphor, brothers and sisters. It's time to organize and realize that the system dismissed us. My people getting enraged, locked up in a cage. The hood is just a trap for us. TCHC is a flop, just a front for the cops. No repairs, bad bugs up in the mattress. The city back, they don't treat us as equal. Enough of this issue, all power to the people. Ish, this grind time and people ain't recession proof. We victims of the system, brainwashing from a youth. They trying to hold us down, putting cops in the schools. Can't pay for textbooks, but they can pay a pig or two. You see the politics are holding us down. There's no social change when liberals and the PC around. So we need change, but where's the Obama for me? We still got youth in the streets who ain't got nothing to eat. They bail out banks in the industries, no power to the people. Even though we can't vote, they never treat us as we equal. So what do we do when the system, corruption and lies? They give tax cuts to the rich and higher taxes for the little guys. They make cuts to the library centers and schools and put more pigs in the sty. They trying to play us for fools. They tear down the social housing to put up condos. Take out the no frills and price drops and put up a longos. This ain't no surprise, history shall repeat it. We need to revolutionize and leave the system defeated. I can't take this no more, no more carrying on. So I go ayah to these Zion and fire upon our Babylon. The city back, they don't treat us as equal. Enough of this issue, all power to the people.
Knowledge is power. Word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday back here in the studio. And I just wanted to, as we're going to throw it to the next segment here, and we got an interview here with a situation that I actually talked about briefly, I think a few days before or after the G20 occurred. And now I finally got the details because I hadn't seen Dan since this whole situation happened. But I saw him on Saturday at the Queen's Park, and then a bunch of the Toronto Truth Seekers went over back to Young Dundas Square, where Toronto Truth Seekers are known to be at on Saturday afternoons. And I'm talking about Dan Faboski, who was actually arrested on the Saturday of the G20, June 26th, 2010. And he in this clip, he tells this story. And, you know, it's pretty hardcore. He talks a bit about the conditions in the jails, as well as the, you know, the story of what happened to the Toronto Truth Seekers' original Thunder Power 400 megaphone that one of the Toronto Truth Seekers owned, Junior, and then he, you know, he was speaking on it, and well, this is it's all connected with the G20 arrest. And, well, he gives the details, though, in this interview. So without further ado, here is the interview. Here's what happened. Keep it real. Keep seeking the truth. This is Dan Fabowski, Dan of the Toronto Tribune.
The G20 protest on June 26th, and I was on near Bay and Adeline Street protesting with a megaphone. And then approximately like around 9:30, we left. We were walking back towards down Queen Street. And when I hit Queen and Church, I sat over the megaphone at around 10 o'clock at night. There was a bunch of cops around a light, and the light was blinking, and it was shorting out. So I said, $1 billion is like for cops to defend a blinking light. And then all of a sudden, two cops rolled out SWAT style from out front of the bus booth and then rushed me from the front. And before they could do anything, I had a cop from behind come running full speed and grab me by my head and like smash my head on the wall. And then he started choking me and he landed on top of me. And then 10 more cops like jumped on top of him and stacked up on top of me. And then they told me to get up, and I was too injured to get up, so they dragged me. And they dragged me into the bus booth, and then they brought me into this Guantanamo Bay prison camp crap that they held me for 30 hours when the lawyer that I talked to in there told me they could only hold me for 24. They wouldn't have read me my rights unless I asked. Most people didn't get their rights read. I asked to have my rights read. They didn't give me my phone call until 20 hours later. They barely gave me any food and water the whole time. There was no beds. It rained while I was in there. It rained right through the roof. There was dirty studio paint on the floor that ruined everybody's clothes in there and made everybody uncomfortable. And also when somebody who called their lawyer had their lawyer come down, and the cop tried to keep it a secret that counsel was there. They tried to have a still call and make phone calls. They tried to keep it this big secret that there was actually counsel in the building. And when I finally got released at 30 hours and I was out front and I was being aided by people out there who were helping everybody who was being released, the police were standing right across the street being really intimidating and making it feel like I was just going to be right put back in jail. So I got a ride home, and then now I'm trying to get something out of this, hopefully.
For real. And, you know, I've been on the Toronto Truth Seekers mailing list. I noticed that there was a message sent out, free speech in the New World Order, with some images of the megaphone, Toronto Truth Seekers megaphone. What happened to the megaphone?
Okay, pretty much right when they arrested me, I even asked if I could keep the megaphone. And they said, yeah, we're going to keep it as evidence. And then I was sitting in this bus booth that they had, that they had me in, and I was watching a cop outside of it holding it. And he was just standing there, slowly smashing the thing off the ground, the speaker box. And then, like, right in front of me, slowly, so I knew it was going to break. And then he just dropped it right down in front of me, looked at me, and stepped on it. That was bullshit, because they should at least keep my evidence intact, for one. And that's my stuff. And what are they gonna? How can they break my stuff? That's damage of property.
So when did you get the picture?
Right after? Oh, right after when I got out, I took the picture, because I got it back in my evidence bag.
They gave you the broken one?
Yeah, they gave me the broken one back in an evidence bag. I got it back, but it was broken.
That's crazy.
Yeah. It was pretty bull. I saw actually the girl who was mentioned of being raped, like it was saying her fingers were put in her vagina forcefully. I actually seen right before that a cop come walking by putting on a blue glove, and he said, "Time to feel the tush," and then he took her out of the cell, and I watched, and I kept that as a mental note for later because I knew that I'd want to testify on all this stuff. And then when they brought her back, she had a really distressed look on her face. And I asked her if she was okay and stuff, because I was in talking distance. And I heard about what happened. And then I heard about Alex Jones' website, InfoWars, after. So that is true. I've seen that myself. Somebody really was molested in there. I was a couple cells down.
That's hardcore. And these were, like, I guess, would you describe these as the cages?
Oh, these were... Okay, the best way, what the exact thing they were, you know when they build a construction, like when they do construction and they want to lock up the construction, like around Toronto, people can't get in? They were like those cages, four of them. They were kind of like a little chicken crate. And then on each side, they had a metal sheet so you could only see out of the front side. And they had a small bench in there. There was studio paint on the ground that was degrading, and it was wet and it was coming off. So it would get on you. If you physically lie down, you'd have studio paint on you. And they had a porta potty with no toilet paper, and they had no sink and no way to get water while you were in the cell. My second cell that I was in had an oil spill and a piss mark, and it had a half-eaten sandwich and pieces of styrofoam all over the place. It was disgusting. I had to stay in there for like 10 hours.
That sounds hardcore. Now, what about the way that you're, if you're arrested on the street for speaking on a megaphone, like, were those, did they tell you that was the reason? Like, were you given a reason?
Yeah, they told me that. Well, at first, I was actually scared when I first got arrested, because The first thing they said was that I was provoking violence and I was provocateuring. So first thing that went through my head was they're framing me. I'm in a lot of trouble. But I got just charged with disturbing the peace. They had no real reason to charge me disturbing the peace. I asked them why, they had no real reason. And the only way they could have charged me for like a sound disturbance was if it was after 11 o'clock. And it was only 10 o'clock, so I could have peacefully like used that. I didn't threaten them or anything. It was I peacefully used my megaphone. And as they were beating me, the entire time I said, I'm a peaceful protester. I'm compliant. I'm not resisting. Let me go. I'm like, you're going to knock me out. I kept saying very peacefully over and over, and they repeatedly beat me for at least 3 to 4 minutes probably.
Did they end up charging with this?
Well, at the end of it all, they brought me to this back cell, and they were telling me about they want me to sign this piece of paper that said that I wouldn't be allowed to protest, which is my right. So they were saying I don't have my rights for 72 hours, but they're saying sign this paper, I can't protest for 72 hours, but I'm not charged with anything, and if I do get found protesting, then I do get charged with something and I can get put back and burnt to court or whatever. They kept trying to tell me while I was in there that I was not going to be allowed back in Toronto, that I was going to be, it was going to be months before I got to see bail because of how packed it was. They psychologically made it seem like I was going to be in there forever. But when it really came down to it, they were full of shit. They couldn't violate my rights and they had to let me go.
For real. And you got the Inside Job shirt on. You're here with the Toronto Truth Seekers here at this rally. So are you keeping up the protest?
Oh, I'm keeping up the protest until something happens, because if people don't do anything, this is going to be the standard procedure. And that can't be for Canada. This isn't like how Canada works. Like that prison camp, another thing, when I was in there, I asked an officer about the prison camp, and I asked if it was going to be open still after. They said they're not closing it down, they're keeping it for future, so I'm not going to stop until that prison camp's closed, because I don't want that in Canada. That's really strange that that's in Toronto. I feel like that prison camp is within an hour of my house. I feel like unsafe from that, you know?
Word up. So that was the interview there with Dan from the Toronto Truth Seekers, who told his story, his personal experience at the G20 weekend, being arrested on the Saturday, spending more than a day in the cage in the Eastern Avenue Film Studios, which had been converted into this temporary jail holding facility. And you know, I heard some of his words there at the end, saying that that he was being told that the place was going to be kept open. I'm hoping that it's closed by now. Hopefully it's back to being a film studio. But you know, we're going to keep into that, looking into that, because as the conspiracy research continues, looking into the conspiracy of the G20, what happened that weekend, we got to look out for things that were told were temporary staying. So luckily, I've been around areas that had been fenced in, and it looks like the fences have been taken down. But I'm not sure about the CCTV cameras, those security cameras that were on the streets. They're supposed to have installed, you know, I think it was close to 100 temporary ones. And then I've got people telling me that they were never going to be temporary, that they're always going to be up. They're going to keep them up. But you know, I'm not totally sure on if they're still up, or you know what's going on, because of what happened at the G20, they definitely used the vandalism and the black bloc tactic as the reasoning for taking out the free speech zone that happened in the Saturday afternoon, and then it was a whole crackdown later that Saturday and then into the Sunday. Well, at least there are some people out there. You know, I saw them at the rally. I saw there's more people at the rally on the July the 10th, two Saturdays ago, than there was this past Saturday. But there were still people out this past Saturday, a few hundred people. And then also, you know, it's good to see some Toronto Truth Seekers back still at the Young and Dundas on Saturday afternoons. Hopefully they'll be back on this Saturday as well. Because, you know, it's the whole Toronto Truth Seekers is not just about 9/11 truth. I think that's one of the reasons why Toronto 9/11 Truth became Toronto Truth Seekers, with the Toronto We Are Change Toronto merged, sort of all merged together and became Toronto Truth Seekers, because Toronto Truth Seekers is about a lot of issues, you know, and it's not just the G20 conspiracy and it's not just the 9/11 conspiracy. We're talking about the economic collapse conspiracy, talking about the carbon tax conspiracy, talking about issues like free man on the land. And then, you know, one of the big ways that Toronto Truth Seekers got known, though, and is still known, is was our campaign with the H1N1. And the H1N1 pandemic that was taken over in 2009, taken over in the media. But, you know, there is some major conspiracy theories involved with that. And then, you know, and then you can even take it out of the realm of theory and into the realm of what really happened, and find that the pandemic, you know, even the definition of pandemic was changed before H1N1 was considered a pandemic around the world. Well, one of the hip-hop acts, one of the things that I always look into is the Temple of Hip-Hop, KRS-One's Temple of Hip-Hop. And, you know, even Dan from Toronto Truth Seekers, TorontoTruthSeekers.com, Dan Fabowski, who I just heard on the interview there, he even told me a few weeks ago how he was into Beast 1333. Beast is one of KRS-One's apprentices. And Beast, you know, I consider him more of a radical within the Temple of Hip-Hop, because he's the Templars of hip-hop, and, you know. But I also like to look into KRS-One, some of his other apprentices or other people that he works with. One is Caddy One. Caddy One, who's running a lot of stuff online, actually just released the Universal Language mixtape, which I downloaded over the weekend. And here's one of those tracks. This one, you know, just to set the mood, H1N1 is not real. Technicality, word up. Temple of Hip-Hop. Respect. Danger without the warning.
The H1N1 virus is going to kill you if you do not get vaccinated. You will die in less than 24 hours. You have less than 24 hours.
Myself, but trust nobody else. Your thoughts are trickling like the blood inside your limousine. It's time to take attack because my rap is very interesting. It's tickling cerebrals in a combination lethal. The raps will live forever like I'm Ringo from the Beatles. And you see holes in your body from a spiritual tsunami. You're slowly decomposing like the trees of Abu Dhabi. I could never carbon copy. I refuse to be a replica. The culture is at war. You should never kill the messenger. No one is protecting you because of all the righteous who stand behind the curtains in the middle of the violence. You will sizzle in the slices like an oven full of bacon. They were feeding me the lies, but my stomach couldn't take it. I hated all the fakeness, I just wanted something killed. So I loaded up the bullet and I let the piggy squeal. Picking up the gripping and I shot him in the shield. With the body bag of ignorance, it's all becoming real. Media lies, don't believe the frenzy. A shortage of vaccine, we're neighborhood friendly. H1N1 is not real, it's a plan to get money and pay back bills. The media lies, don't believe the frenzy. A shortage of vaccine, we're neighborhood friendly. H1N1 is not real, it's a plan to get money and make that kill. Highly infectious to those in a Lexus. It wasn't in Mexico, it started in Texas. A bird and a pig got down in a pen. Started a virus that rounded the sin. That's how it begins, but is that the truth? Healthy is healthy, the lies are the proof. Disguised as a booth, I'm entrapping the rapper. Showing them something exactly what matters. Detaching the patterns derived in the scheme to billions of dollars for every vaccine. I saw in a dream that no one was sick. It was all in my head, a wicked ass trick. I wish that it sticks deep in the conscious before you feel woozy and start to get nauseous. The knowledge in college is still not directing you. Humans are cattle, I feel like dissecting. The media lies, don't believe the frenzy. A shortage of vaccine, we're neighborhood friendly. H1N1 is not real, it's a plan to get money and pay back bills. The media lies, don't believe the frenzy. A shortage of vaccine, we're neighborhood friendly. H1N1 is not real, it's a plan to get money and make that kill. I'm paying back bills till radiation kills. You swallow propaganda like a vaccination pill. The vaccination will attack against immunity. The plan of devastation executed very beautifully. In this community, we are too intelligent. If it's so good, then give a shot to the president and his whole family. My sentiments exactly why I'm picking up the microphone and rapping. Attacking on the media who lie like Wikipedia. That's why I never watch the news, they're always misleading you. Feeding you to fear in this greedy little year. I wonder what they'll cook up just to see you crying tears. Someone's got to die and someone's got to live.
trust nobody else.
Word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday back here. That was the track H1N1's Not Real by Technicali, off the Universal Language mixtape, Temple of Hip Hop. Word up. And you know, here we go on this this whole topic of the G20. You know, so what I'll do is I'll open up the phone lines just in case anybody out there is listening that wants to talk about this. If the discussion's generated some thoughts in your head, well, 416-595-1655. 416-595-1655 is the number here at CKLN to get on Word of Mouth Wednesday. If you got any news or anything that you'd like to get out, but you know, while we still got some time left on the show, it might be a good time to get into maybe some past interviews that I haven't gotten to yet that I've been meaning to play. How about we go with the first interview that I recorded at the G20 protest, which was on the Friday, June 25th. I spoke with Brian Palmer. Brian Palmer is a university professor, and he is or a college professor, and he's also an author. I've seen him speaking at events, socialist action events, and I think he's also, you know, he's known within the social justice and activist community, you know, as an academic. Well, here was Brian Palmer's thoughts on the G20.
Toronto has been turned into a police state. I mean, there are just police everywhere. They're searching you, your knapsacks when you come into a park. They're asking for your identity. This, you know, for a demonstration which, you know, basically is registering protest against a whole series of injustices, of state activities, of global collaborations of the powerful and the elite, of failure to act on commitments and promises of the past, which are devastating the environment, degrading, you know, workers' rights, dispossessing the poor even more. People are here to create a, you know, to kind of lend their voice to the creation of a better world. And we're basically running a gauntlet of police to do that. You know, it's just outrageous, really. And you know, the $1.2 billion that's been spent on this could be so much better put to use to actually, you know, feed the poor, house the homeless, protect the disadvantaged. I think, you know, I mean, the basic point is the established powers that be are not interested in those things. And they're interested in intimidation, and they're interested in, and it actually, you know, I think it probably has an impact. I mean, I would bet that there are a lot of people who have fled Toronto because just there's a fear hanging in the atmosphere when this, you know, and or they haven't shown up here today because they, you know, they do think, well, you know, something could happen to me. It's too bad. But when you get on that slippery road of the stifling of dissent, I mean, you're moving towards a society that has, you know, really, that's silenced a lot of people and that's closed so many doors of possibility.
For real, and we're in Allen Gardens. It's a Friday. We got the G20. It's going to be a big weekend. Do you have any predictions of if, you know, do you think there's going to be a big announcement at the end of this weekend, at this meeting? What do you think about the leaders meeting here?
Well, to be quite frank, I think there'll be a lot of rhetoric, but there won't be much that actually moves forward in any way. And in fact, I mean, if there's anything that comes out of the history of these meetings, it's that, you know, rogue states, by which one has to include Canada on, you know, various climate, you know, and environmental issues, basically are able to kind of go their own way and do whatever they want, even if there is a kind of collective agreement that certain things should be done. I mean, what's going to be done? Are they going to have, for instance, no more offshore oil drilling because we know what a disaster that is? Are they going to say no to that? Are they going to say, okay, let's pull the troops out of Afghanistan because we don't want imperialist wars around the globe? I don't think they're going to do that. Are they going to say, the banks that, you know, caused the, you know, and speculators that caused such a sort of helped to cause such a financial meltdown and revealed capitalism's worst underbelly over the last couple of years, are we going to actually say, okay, let's, you know, we're going to do something serious about that in terms of regulation? I don't think so. So what I think is, you know, these are public relations exercises that are increasingly about intimidation. I mean, intimidation may be the main message here, not anything else that's going to come out of it.
For real, and it looks like the march is about to start, but do you mind just introducing yourself?
Yeah, my name's Brian Palmer. I teach in Canadian Studies at Trent University.
Awesome, thanks a lot.
Okay.
Word up. So that was Brian Palmer from Trent University, who's also the author. I think one of his books that he wrote was it was a biography on James P. Cannon, who was a known labor activist from the, I guess, the early part of the 20th century. I guess he was one of the most known communists in America. So he wrote, I think he wrote that book. I can get that info, I'll look into that some more to confirm that. But, you know, just going back in time here, back into the past, you know, 3.5 weeks ago, back into the G20, another person that was making a lot of noise on the G20 weekend was an out-of-town activist, Charlie Veach of the Love Police, who was there. How about we go back in time here, check out the Sunday, June the 27th, March, and here's some words of Charlie Veach right in the heart of the protest.
To keep all the great unwashed public away from the 20 very important people. They are much better than you, and the sooner you realize this, the happier you can be. We are here from the office of the architect of the Matrix to inform you, you are not scared enough. You must be more scared. At this G20 summit, the police outnumber the protesters 2-1. We are sending you a message. You tried to bring a gang out. The Toronto police and the Associated Canadian police can bring out many more people than you. Freedom is a thing of the past. You are all now slaves in the new world order. As mentioned by George Bush Sr., George Bush Jr., Gordon Brown, Kissinger, and Zinoviev Brzezinski of the Council of Foreign Relations. Welcome to the new world of austerity. Welcome to the new world where we, the international bankers, spent all your money, took all our bonuses, turned it into gold, and now you, the great unwashed public, have to suffer the consequences and have more taxation. The way we can solve all the world's problems is to have more taxation. Keep you poor and stupid and separate and misinformed with the mainstream media. What is this here? CBC News, Canadian Broadcasting Corporation, the propaganda piece for the Canadian government, much like the BBC in the Great Britain, is the propaganda piece of the mainstream British government. Ladies and gentlemen, your politicians are not in control. They are the little puppet slaves of the international financiers that have been running this world for the last 100 years. Look up Cecil Rhodes, look up the Rhodes Foundation. Look up the Royal Institute of International Affairs, now called Chatham House. Look up the Council of Foreign Relations. You do not need to be a long-haired, crazy conspiracy theorist. It's all in the public domain. It's public knowledge that this world is run by approximately 20 people, but not the 20 delegates of the G20.
Word up. That was Charlie Veach of the Love Police calling out the G20 on the streets of Toronto at the end of June. Just a trip back in the past there. Some clips that I hadn't got to from the G20. What went down? Well, you know, as the world continues to turn, as the conspiracy continues to deepen, it might be time to get into a reasoning conspiracy episode. But, you know, I was actually listening to one of the great shows on this station, CKLN. A lot of good shows going on. But I tuned in on Monday for Word of Mouth Monday, which is Black Krishna's being hosting it. And he had featured a guest, the legendary editor of the Toronto Street News, Victor Fletcher. And this is a quick clip here of where it got. This was something caught my ear here. Take a look at when Victor Fletcher started talking about the BP oil spill, and as well, some past historical predictions.
Just happened to be in a library on Sunday there yesterday, and for a few minutes, and I was taking my mother there. So I'm always interested in, you know, if there's any new books. Anyway, I came across an old dog-eared copy of a Nostradamus thing, and it had his predictions for different years. And I flipped through. Okay, so what did he say about 2010? I just about fell off my chair. 2010, he's talking about oily rain and plants being speckled with oil drops. And I thought, wow, that's something else.
Absolutely. Well, okay, Victor.
So that was a clip from July the 19th episode of Word of Mouth Monday, Monday 7 to 8 p.m., hosted by Black Krishna and Victor Fletcher, who is the editor of the Toronto Street News, a newspaper you can find on the streets of Toronto. Well, that you know, got me into doing some research, because I've actually found some of info, and I don't know if you can believe everything you read on the internet, but what's the comparison between what you can read on the internet compared to a book you can find in the discarded section of the library with predictions that were written in 1555. That's right. Nostradamus apparently foretold the BP disaster in 1555. I found this research, Quatrain 29. So I found this online article, Gulf Oil Spill Mega Disaster Now Unfolding. Did Nostradamus foresee the event over 450 years ago? Written by Joseph Robert Jachmans, puts his findings into a series that he calls the Time Capsule Reports. Now, this is what it says here, and this is from the Milky Way blog, and it's in the year 1555, Nostradamus wrote the following verse, given in the original Old French. The verse, part of his prophetic writings, was designated as Century 1, Quatrain 29. So I'll read it in the just in case we have any listeners from a different time period or a different dimension listening. You might be interested in hearing the original words. I'll try to read it out. Quand le poison terrestre et aquatique part forte vogue et au gravier ceramis se forme étrange suave et horrifique par mer aux Mers bin tot les enemies. Now, you go on to read in the article, they give a strict translation given in modern English, and I'll read that out now. When fish and other land and sea life by force will be put upon the beach by a strong wave, its form will appear strange, oily, and horrible. Coming by seawater very steadily, it shall climb the walls as an enemy. So this is, this is the, it definitely seems like he was, he's definitely made a prediction, that seems to be, have some basis in what's going on in 2010. I even just, saw some headlines about another oil spill in China, today. So, this is what we're seeing in the waters. Waters are turning, full of oil. And, there is a major cover-up going on, a major conspiracy. That's why I wanted to get into reasoning conspiracy. Maybe we'll get into that in the last few minutes of the show, right when we get back. I just got a song here, 1 Million Gallons, and it's a song by Joseph Scroggs. Stay tuned, Word of Mouth Wednesday. Be back. Word of Mouth Wednesday, just coming to the end of the show here. So when we get into our reasoning conspiracy for this week, you know, it's definitely going to be a bit more condensed than last week's. And the topic isn't even as huge as the largest ecological disaster in human history, the BP oil spill in the Gulf. Well, but it does tie into that, because that's been getting a lot of words in the media, and especially at the end of last week when it was announced that they put a cap. Finally, 80 days later, they put a cap on the leak. Now, what I'm trying to get into here on this episode of Reasoning Conspiracy is the idea of a cover-up. So the cap I'm saying is, well, it's part of a cover-up, physically part of a covering up the whole of where the oil was spilling from. But also, the timing of it and the focus on the of the media on the cap and the BP oil spill are a bit suspect because of what else was happening at the end of last week. And that is in relation to one of the largest conspiracies that I believe is going on currently. And it was actually the largest civil lawsuit in U.S. history, civil fraud suit in U.S. history. And it was against Goldman Sachs, the Wall Street banking firm that has been, in the media a lot. And they had been accused here of a civil fraud. And a lot of people had thought that it was actually criminal what was being done. But not many people know that the largest fraud case in history has actually been settled, because it was overshadowed in the media by this major news that finally a cap had gone on the oil spill. And you know, I guess you could say that that's a good thing, even though the next day President Obama reappeared saying, you know, not to be too optimistic about this cap in the oil spill, that the actual plan is for August, that they're going to try to have a relief well in the next month. But I haven't even heard what President Obama's had to say about this situation. Maybe he hasn't even talked about it, because what we're talking about is a civil fraud suit against Goldman Sachs, all linked in with a subprime mortgage business. What we're talking about here is a $550 million settlement, which is the largest settlement in U.S. history for a Wall Street firm that occurred at the end of last week. But, you know, they're saying that pales in comparison with the estimated $13 billion annual profits of Goldman Sachs. So a $550 million fine might be the largest in history, but for Goldman Sachs, it's a fraction of the profits they've been able to make. So how this breaks down, they're saying $300 million will go to the U.S. Treasury Department, $250 million to investors in the mortgage-linked security, I guess investors that had lost it all on this situation. The situation with Goldman Sachs, another headline: Goldman has set aside $9 billion. They've set aside $9 billion to pay as revenues drop. So this is going to be $9 billion for pay because their revenues are dropping. So things are changing in the economy. And included in this article is actually this: they just got hit with a $600 million UK bonus tax. I guess the United Kingdom, under their new government and their new austerity plans, have installed a tax on bonuses for the people that work in these corporations. Well, Goldman Sachs apparently just got hit with a $600 million bonus tax. I guess that shows you just how much they are paying out in bonuses if they're setting aside $9 billion for bonuses. Now, Various theories say that that the reason why the SEC settled this, the Securities Exchange Commission, which had been taking Goldman Sachs to the lawsuit, could have been because of the Congress passing the financial reform bill hours before the settlement was announced. That's right. Another major announcement occurred at the end of last week. All in a row here, we have BP oil spill being capped, Goldman Sachs settlement coming after the major announcement that the Wall Street reforms had finally passed, one of Obama's key planks that he's going to try to reform the same industry that caused all this economic crisis. Well, there's another theory that SEC feared that it could have lost in court, which I'm not sure about. And then there's another one about Obama didn't want Goldman Sachs to get in trouble because he knew that he would need the you know, the people working there to help him out, get the economy back in order. You know, my theory is that it was just it's the cover up of the cover up of the cover up. And, you know, it's all back to the TARP, which was the Troubled Asset Relief Program involved with those toxic assets. Well, the definition of TARP is a cover-up. So when you look at this all combined together, we're talking about a cover-up of a cover-up of a cover-up of a cover-up. Well, you know, it's a lot to think about, a lot to get into, and we got into a lot today on the Word of Mouth Wednesday, just wrapping it up here because the Blues' Dr. Julie Hill is in the studio with getting ready for the Blue Remedy. But I just wanted to read out, the websites again. Don Stevenson of the Canadians Advocating for Political Participation. You can check out more info on CAP at CanadaParticipates.ca. And also like to thank Don Stevenson for speaking with me at the rally, and then also like to thank Dan from the Toronto True Seekers, TorontoTrueSeekers.com, for more info. We'll probably be out on the streets on Saturday, see what's going on with the Toronto True Seekers, and then also like to thank all our listeners, and hopefully even the co-host Robin Yento might be back next week, so that'll be good. But my name's Daniel Libby, and thanks again for listening to the Word of Mouth Wednesday. We'll hopefully be back next week, and stay tuned for the Blue Remedy with the Blues Dr. Julie Hill. This has been the Word of Mouth. Word up. Word of Mouth Wednesday, July 21st, 2010. Word is bond. Word out.
Everywhere I go, people running around, trying to get to the top when they're really going down. Oh, won't you help them?